On March 27, 2024, the Ivan Doig Center for the Study of the Lands and People of the North American West at Montana State University hosted a talk at the Museum of the Rockies entitled The Buffalo Commons, A National History, A Regional History, A Family History. Deborah and Frank Popper saw the rural decline in Great Plains states and suggested replacing economically struggling agriculture with a vast restored grassland populated by buffalo. This idea they called the Buffalo Commons. 37 years later, they reflect on that vision, its modern relevancy, and its consequences for Montanans and themselves.
Frank and I first wrote about the Great Plains and coined the term Buffalo Commons in 1987. Buffalo Commons is an image of an alternative way of thinking about the region's future, how people would measure possibilities more in terms of ecosystem health. We paired two words together that are not usually put together. Buffalo meant to suggest tapping into the knowledge and place of native species, while commons required thinking about our joint interests and interdependence. At the time, Frank was planning professor at Rutgers, and I was a graduate student there in geography. And this was work that was following up on Frank's own work on what the 19th century called the frontier. He found a surprising amount of the country still had a population that the 19th century called frontier. And in documenting that, he said the frontier, instead of being closed or disappearing, as the 1890 census and the formidable historian Frederick Jackson Turner had pronounced, remained a vital and active place in America. Turner was right in his titling of his influential essay, The Significance of the Frontier in American History, but wrong in how he saw that significance. To capture all that better, Frank decided he needed a subregion to explore and chose the Great Plains, and I went along for the ride. The 1980s was a period when demographic, economic, and environmental strains were quite visible on the Great Plains. Rural population loss, certainly not new, was hard to ignore as one drove through small towns where empty storefronts abounded. Farmers and ranchers struggled financially, and some of the impacts of a whole range of environmental practices like massive monoculture, center pivot irrigation, and heavy applications of biocides and fertilizers proved quite contrary to the optimism with which they had been introduced. What to do? In our 1987 article, The Great Plains from Dust to Dust, we thought about that and tried to put it in a historical and geographical context of booms and busts, homesteading and outmigration, the love, hope, and sorrows of place. We ended the article with the image of a Buffalo Commons, but this all came out of several years of work and thinking. It's a story the wonderful novelist Ivan Doig told with such power himself before us. His McGaskill Family Trilogy portrays generations of struggles and joys living in Montana. Homesteading days and dancing at the Rascal Fair, Depression of pre-World War II, English Creek, and then the real Buffalo Commons novel, Ride With Me, Mariah Montana, a story of the state's centennial year. That novel centers on Jick McGaskill, by now the family elder, as he accompanies his daughter Mariah and ex-son-in-law Riley, photographer and journalist, as they ride around the state documenting the centennial year for the newspaper. The novel's format opens up the possibility of dropping in on lots of people's experiences. But Jig's question is at its heart, what to do with his ranch now? Will anyone in the family want it? Not Mariah. Halfway through the book, she tells him, "You know, I couldn't wait to get off the place when I was growing up. Away to college, away to where I've been. I got over that, and before I knew it, I was fond of the place again. But it will never be a part of me in that same way it is for you. I'm just a visitor. So then, for Jick, what comes next? They keep traveling. More places, more stories in Montana. The denouement has Jick back home. Although a man of few words, he's nonetheless the centennial speaker. And he starts in with his description of Montana, its problems, in his words, its tattered side. Like the blowing away prairies that never should have been cut by the plow, and the little towns they are taking with them. Add its beauty, the unbeatable way the land latches into the sky. It's then he announces his decision, his throat catching. There are goodbyes to be said today. Mariah's heading to California, so that's one of the goodbyes. But more unexpectedly, my leaving is of my ranch, the Reese place, as it began, a homestead of my grandfather's side of the family, the McGaskill place. Now, like so many others, I've had to face the day when the land and the McGaskill family no longer match up. Anyway, I'm leaving my ranch. Yes, but leaving it too. And that's the end of his paragraph. Full stop. The next paragraph. And you know who it is. The Nature Conservancy. But with a proviso that it's for buffalo. So you could say that's full turn that the novel and the trilogy make from the old era. Doy tells one family story, but the history he's drawing on integrates the national, the regional, and the familiar, even the global. You can look at public policy of the United States as an exercise, for better or worse, of taking this land, all of it, from long-standing inhabitants, and forming it into a whole of its own making, objectives and practices. It appropriated a diverse set of regions with different physical attributes and displaced and replaced and disturbed who was there and how they used the land. There was a national agenda that swept up the region, this region, and all the rest. From sea to shining sea meant all of it was part of one entity, even as the pieces differed from each other in terms of vegetation, climate, landforms, resources that could be used in place or moved across space to entirely different places. Differences in service towards some form of integration. For our version of Doig's narrative, we too did a bit of storytelling, but social science style, defining and describing the region, parts of 10 states, semi-arid, flat to rolling, largely treeless, based on natural resources, agriculture and energy especially, and with rural populations dropping pretty consistently since the Dust Bowl. We thought future direction should shift in a direction that has since gotten more attention, toward ecological restoration. Healthy land, ecosystems, and better relationships between people and different peoples and land. We looked to the past to imagine the future. Think of how native species kept the land healthy. What could be learned from that? Take down fences, bring back bison who had roamed in massive herds, tearing up the earth, but in whose aftermath the land regenerated, and who lived more symbiotically with a variety of other species, like prairie dogs and black-footed ferrets, a whole range of birds. Think of how the region could be valued not just for what could be traded in a mercantile sense, value derived from ecological services, attention to habitat and biodiversity, aesthetics, forms of recreation, as park, as wilderness, as a place where those who loved it could find a way to stay and prosper as they saw fit. This was very much a regional story, yet the region is by no means isolated. The Great Plains fits into a national agenda and a national myth, with its own role in the national economy, polity, culture, and aesthetics. Its homesteading years promoted the nation as a place with land for the taking and developing, a place that would feed the country and the world. Opportunity with a capital O, even as we know that opportunity was only for some. And many of those who got it couldn't get that opportunity elsewhere. So a mix of possibilities, some good, some bad. The Great Plains fits into the myth of the West. Thoreau sets up that myth of the West early. As he said of it, the future, even though the West then was actually Western Mass, the future lies that way to me, and the earth seems more unexhausted and richer on that side. The majesty of the Great Plains, Willa Cather writes, elsewhere the sky is the roof of the world, but here the earth was the floor of the sky. But it's a regional story of disappointment, too, not just majesty. Those who gained a homestead were driven out by drought and dramatic drops in the economy. Stephen Kahn's recent book, The Lies of the Land on Rural America, says, we've talked about the rural with the language of myth and the language of crisis. High expectations, expectations unmet. Contradiction is at the heart of the American idea, and the Great Plains epitomizes it. I'm sure we, Frank and I, imbibed these contradictions as we grappled with our ideas about the region. We brought our own training and our personal histories to trying to make sense of what was happening here and where it fits within the nation. We looked at demographics, economics, and environment, but also built on the values from our own backgrounds. I was born in New York City to parents whose parents had recently come from Eastern Europe. The one grandparent I got to know came in 1905 from Kiev, making his way from Ellis Island to the Lower East Side, bringing his skills as a tailor. Frank's parents came from Vienna in 1938 to Chicago, escaping the Nazis and a fate that overtook so many relatives and friends, something they never really wanted to talk about. Both our families bought into the American idea that they and we were so lucky to be here, where we could find, again, opportunity, freedom, and security. We should learn about where we were, celebrate it, and, with our own backgrounds, critique it too. Frank's parents regularly took him and his brother on road trips across the country, sort of familiarization exercises. While I was growing up, we never left the East Coast. But getting out of the city and into the country and nature was the ultimate joy. We lived in places of great dynamism, both of us, and change, but bought into Jeffersonian notions and Thoreauvian notions too, not literally, but culturally, valuing continuity and land, wilderness, and agrarianism. And this was true especially as Jews, whose forebears had fled the Russian Pale, where we were not entitled to land attachment. We hoped here to be accepted, to fit in, and that meant having a strong relationship to land and wide open spaces. So foundational in the American narrative. And what's more American landish than the Great Plains? Frank's family trips and cross-country ones during college made him want to study the Great Plains. And so in 1985, we did some field work, turning it into a family trip, driving and camping across the northern and central plains with our two children, going especially to places losing population. While Frank went off and interviewed bank presidents and business people and maybe program administrators, I went to the food store, wandered the aisles, did laundry at the local laundromat, kinds of things I did in my own daily life back home. And I talked to people. I'd strike up conversations at the local cafes, at county fairs, rodeos, the campgrounds where we mostly stayed. I tried to understand the lives I was seeing. What were the pleasures? What were the pressures? A few things were striking, certainly. An austere and complex beauty. Open air, no traffic. Tradition. Neighborliness, distance, and visible loss. As places shrank, as people left, as businesses shuttered and opportunity faded, what would be there for one's children? The losses, a pattern that was decades old, had passed a tipping point in many places, and those pressures increased. This was a place where you had to get more with less. That certainly was apparent in financial terms. Any check of USDA figures, for example, showed how rates of return for the region's farmers and ranchers were tight. It was equally true of farm and ranch practices, where all the pressures were to get as much out of every acre, leading to strains on grazing given, say, stocking rates. Trends to maximize also led to increased application of pesticides and fertilizers. Population declines also meant getting more out of those who remained. You had a smaller pool of people to draw on for absolutely everything. Space was abundant, but little else was. The system that exerted these pressures exists everywhere, or certainly elsewhere. We all live in a world that prioritizes maximization and efficiency in ways that belie their meaning. That means stress is just part of life. We are supposed to live as though every day is the best day, but we know that's not the case. In crop terms, not every year do the rains come at the best time. In personal time, in terms, sometimes your kid is sick on the day you're supposed to produce a report. We chase that optimal day, and sometimes we succeed, but often we don't. Living lighter on the land, which was what we were talking about, says recalibrate. It's not giving up. Maybe it's optimizing different things. Finding alternatives to them is what we as individuals and as members of communities, as parts of regions and nations do. But some places offer more alternatives, more diversity. The Great Plains alternatives struck us as in need of expansion or redirection. And the Buffalo Commons was a way of saying, look to the land, the workings of the land itself, the interrelationships to land and community, and imagine. The Buffalo Commons went on to have its own life, one that took over ours, but also introduced us to lots of people who were as much a part of this talk's title, which includes families. Once the article was published and got picked up by the late 1980s and 1990s media, and what a different media world that was, definitely pre-social media, we spent years responding to invitations that enriched our understandings of the region and our own lives as we engaged in a conversation about possible futures for the region. Our speaking engagements always included meeting lots of people and getting shown around. Often that was designed to subtly show us what we didn't know and how we had misunderstood the nature of place, particularly how central the region is to the national economy and global food supply. I have so many images of fascinating, funny, and poignant moments. Poignant. The woman outside Greeley, Colorado, clearly pained by our talk of mistakes in settlement patterns, telling me how disrespectful I was to her ancestors who had worked so hard. "Don't say that, Deborah," she said, and I will never forget the way she said it to me. It's just too hard to hear. Funny, one host family taking us in four-wheel drives across their fields, me taken slowly and gently by the wife, Frank ahead, with a husband who was having a fabulous time, going as fast as possible and finding every bump he could. Just to really shake Frank up, his wife sort of clucking in sort of embarrassment, but total amusement. And then fascinating, the thrill of watching bison under a whole range of conditions, including their own family ones. And finding the research on the region grow, including here certainly in Montana State, on how to do things differently. So let me stop there. And with every visit, the idea deepened of what the Buffalo Commons could be. And let me hand that over to Frank to talk about it.
Deborah's right to emphasize family, and she's right to emphasize our family backgrounds. My parents fled Vienna in Austria on very short notice in 1938. They did not know each other until they met in Chicago, where there was a very tiny Austrian colony. But they met, they got married, and as Deborah says, Americanization tours, American familiarity tours, were very much a part of my childhood And they were very influential, except my parents tended to go to places, there were cities that weren't like Vienna, weren't like Europe at all. New Orleans, for example, great contrasts. San Francisco, Los Angeles. And I retained my interest in America and American land and familiarizing myself with it. But in my case, for whatever reason, my movement was more rural. What I really thought, especially as I became a professional city planner, was that city planning in particular, environmental land use planning in particular, natural resource planning, whatever you called it, tended to be too urban and too suburban. Now, certainly that fitted, you know, where the population of the United States was growing. In fact, since, I believe, 1992, the 1992 election, suburbanites actually dominated as a percentage of the electorate. But my sense was, maybe this is some rebellious or maverick impulse on my part, that I wanted to do something different. In a fellowship year at an organization called Resources for the Future in Washington, which, by the way, did have a very Western emphasis and leadership despite its Washington location, I did start to work on the American West. This is before I was smart enough to write with Deborah. And then I went to Rutgers in academia, where I was, it was the first time I'd ever been in academia, and I was approaching 40 as I went there. Had a lot of trepidation about it. But I got interested in the American West there, and at Resources for the Future. And when I went to Rutgers, there was all this pressure to publish, and publish fast, and publish a lot, which I kind of resisted. But eventually Deborah and I did this car track camping trip that she talked about in 1985. We had great fun, and it was a great bonding experience with our children. And we returned to suburban New Jersey, which I was not that fond of, because I liked the West better. And we came up with this Buffalo Commons idea. And we originally worked together, me as relatively junior professor, Deborah as graduate student, to do something together that would help our careers both. But we'd rather write with each other than with anybody else. That was very much a motive there. And we, as Janet alluded to, never expected that our Buffalo Commons work, our Great Plains work, would received the impact it did. If it had simply disappeared off into the academic professional ether, we would not have been surprised at all. And in fact, I think at some level we expected that. And plus, I was also fielding questions about from my colleagues, and also, come to think of it, from my father, why are you interested in that place? Why are you interested in the Great Plains? There's nothing there. That struck me as odd, and struck me as worth rebelling against, I guess you might call it. So we went off to the Great Plains. And again, we were surprised by the impact. That impact has continued all these years. I'll get to it in a minute, but I do want to point out that the story of the Great Plains and the depiction of the Great Plains in American literature, in great American literature, has always been very strongly family-based. It's been family stories. This is not just a matter of Ivan Doig in the Catskill trilogy, or his fabulous memoir, This House of Sky, but it goes back to people like Willa Cather. It goes back to people in Nebraska. It goes back to people like Wallace Stegner in Saskatchewan, the Saskatchewan part of the plains, which, by the way, one should remember, the Great Plains do take up large parts of three Canadian provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta. And there's also, this came out after we wrote about the Buffalo Commons, there's also a very interesting novel, which some of you may know about, by an author. Some of you, again, may have read lots of his stuff. The Montana-based author, Richard Wheeler, wrote in, I believe it was 1999, a novel about the Buffalo Commons that, you know, just for ease of reference, was titled The Buffalo Commons. And it takes place in the early 2000s. There is an entrepreneur who sounds a little bit like George Soros, originally Hungarian. He's made a great fortune in American shopping center development to the point where he wants to be able to give back. He starts to give money to the poor. He and his wife discover, at least in the novel, that the poor tend to be relatively ungrateful. Wheeler goes on like that for quite a while. And so they decide to create the Buffalo Commons in the Northern Plains. And they encounter a lot of resistance. There's a particular focus on a ranch family in Montana, very distrustful of the entrepreneur's motives, but also are having the problems with just keeping the ranch that Deborah alluded to. The real villains of Wheeler's novel turn out to be environmentalists. They're sneaky. They're underhanded. They lie a lot. And they almost win out in the sense that they don't like the Buffalo Commons either. And so what eventually happens is at the end, the entrepreneur makes a secret phone call to the President of the United States. This is happening slightly in the future from 1999. And that president is a Republican from Oklahoma who is of Comanche descent, partly Comanche descent, and who finally gets the federal agencies and the environmentalists to shape up. And the epilogue to the novel describes large portions, Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, as the Buffalo Commons. Buffalo Commons wins out in the end. We think it's a great novel. Okay, moving away from literature, it's been quite clear for many years that people were picking up on our idea, and even if they didn't use the term Buffalo Commons, they were doing Buffalo Commons adjacent kinds of things. Here I think of American Prairie. Here I think of the Matador Ranch that's run by the Nature Conservancy. Here I think of the many, many indigenous efforts done at the tribal level, or at the individual level, or run by a very influential organization called the Intertribal Bison Council, which is located in South Dakota, which now has 80 tribe membership of 80 tribes, not all in the plains, but who are investing in and are pushing buffalo management, buffalo culture, buffalo art, and doing so on native terms. And those terms, while they're not all the same, they don't all match up with each other, are distinctly different from the white terms that Deborah describes as being primarily profit-motive, profit-driven. They're a little bit profit-driven, but not entirely. And then, of course, you have Ted Turner, who has, I believe, 4 ranches in Montana, a total of 18 across the Great Plains. They total 2 million acres, which is a lot of acres. And he also runs a restaurant, a chain of restaurants called Ted's Montana Grill. I gather there's one here. I've been to the one in New York and Denver. They are also located in all kinds of, there's 40-some, I think, in all kinds of non-Great Plainsy places like Nashville, Tennessee, Columbus, Ohio. And there's also, as another stream, another arm of the developing Buffalo Commons, the research that's been done in lots of different Plains universities. I point out to here the Buffalo Food Initiative, Indian Food Initiative here at Montana State. There's also a very interesting new one at South Dakota State University called the Center for Buffalo Excellence, which is actually a partnership between South Dakota State, the National Bison Association, which is located in Denver, which is basically the interest group of bison owners, and the National Buffalo Foundation. And they look to be very interesting research operations. I myself, as you know, I am basically an Easterner, even though I tell people I'm from Chicago, and I am from Chicago. These active research operations in plain states with conservative governors whose staff must have, or the governor himself or herself, must have approved the creation of these things, says to me, as all these things say to me, all these initiatives and activities say to me that, yes, the Buffalo Commons is going to happen. These are the early steps. It's hard to know which ones will bloom and which ones will fade, but there's a lot of them. And again, if they don't use the Buffalo Commons as a term, we understand perfectly, because it's still a kind of radioactive term, even after all these years. And some of you may know about or be able to tell us about this radioactivity and how it continues after all these years. Our sense is also that the on-the-ground activity in the Great Plains, the continued depopulation of many rural parts of the plains, all over the plains, the rise of more assertive Native American buffaloism, the climate change that was not really an issue when we first wrote, but has certainly, again, bloomed a lot since, and you know, shows itself in places like Glacier National Park, and for all, in all kinds of farming and ranching settings, and the projections such as we have. I'm not sure how much one can really trust them, but the projections say that the effects will probably be greater on the southern plains, places like New Mexico and Texas and Oklahoma. But they're going to be felt here, too, and they, too, can go in a Buffalo Commons direction, or at least the aftermath can be taken in that direction. So, on the whole, I continue to be interested, fascinated. We continue to be interested, fascinated by the Great Plains. And although it's often been portrayed otherwise, we have always seen it, Deb and I, as an optimistic vision, a plan B, so to speak, for a region whose original plan A clearly is not working as well as it should. And when we suggest the Buffalo Commons as plan B, we are by no means opposed to other plans, non-Buffalo Commons plans, plan C and D, because the real world works the way it does, these different plans C and D and B and remnant A too will mix together in complicated ways that are beyond the ken of the sort of policy analysis school that I at least come out of. But our sense is things are moving in the Buffalo Commons direction, and that is, in fact, an optimistic direction. And we also are very taken with the analysis of the University of Montana historian, Dan Flores, who writes that if the national parks, national forests, were the great conservation slash environmental innovation of the 19th century, and the Wilderness Act of 1964 was the great such innovation of the 20th century, that buffalo restoration, primarily in the Great Plains, will be the great conservation environmental task of the 21st century. And as far as we can see, that prophecy is on its way to being fulfilled. Thank you.
You've been listening to a talk on the Buffalo Commons by Deborah and Frank Popper, recorded at the Museum of the Rockies on March 27th, 2024.